Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Welcome back to the QuakeCast. This is Dumptruck DS. On today's episode, we have Messiah from the U.S. Quake World community. He has a Discord, he has a website, he's got servers, all kinds of stuff. But we're going to be talking about his test.usquake.world mapping test server that he's created. So if you're a mapper or you're interested in multiplayer mapping for Quake World, you can create a map, upload it to the server, and easily run tests on this server. So we're going to talk about that at length. Also, just all kinds of crazy new additions to the Quake World, the US Quake World multiplayer scene. We're also going to have another edition of Greenwood's Vanilla Scoops, where you can find some really good vanilla maps to check out. But without further ado, here is my interview with Messiah. So welcome back to the show. I'm really glad you're here because there's quite a few updates for multiplayer Quake World, especially on the mappings front. So what have you been up to lately with US Quake World?
Definitely the same old, doing the 4 to 5 events per week, you know, the 2-on-2s, the 4-on-4s, you know, cool stuff like Huni mode and different stuff within the KTX mod. But lately, we've been trying to focus on new maps and new mappers for Quake World in general. And so recently, I've put together a server where people can upload maps that are a work in progress. And those maps can be, they're scanned with BSP util and kind of checked for errors and stuff in that way. And then once they're there, they can actually start and stop servers from a web page and then actually connect to those servers and try out their maps and have other people try out their maps collaboratively.
Sorry, I had my mic muted there. I've got to say, as a mapper, that's a thing of beauty. I think I've not used it yet, but that is so cool. Just removing the barrier of having to set up a server alone, just right there, is massive. And then you've got a nice little front end there and a start and stop button and all that. And then you've got a nice log. So what's the response been so far? Like what are people saying?
Pretty good. One mapper I worked with in particular, Abraxas, he just recently released a map. I think it's Simulacra. And that's a pretty popular one in our community so far for like 2-on-2, 1-on-1. And I've recently put it into my FFA rotation. And the cool thing about it is, you know, he kind of started from a center base and worked out from there and kind of worked with other mappers within the community to kind of figure out as he went. But as he got closer to like a beta release where all the features were done and all the geometry was done, he, you know, had different players, especially like higher skilled players, test out the map for 1-on-1 and 2-on-2 on that server. And as we did that, we kind of made some cool kind of significant changes. Like you can kind of like rocket jump to red armor and certain things from certain locations that weren't possible beforehand. That kind of made it into the final version, which was pretty cool. So that kind of collaborative theory kind of worked out.
So just for my edification, so how long of a process was that from when he first started uploading it to, I mean, is this just a couple sessions or did it go over a long period of time?
I think the first time he actually uploaded to the test server was like late January. And by that time it was already in beta, well, from his perspective. So I think the first time was like beta 6 or beta 7. And he was in release in like early February, like second week of February, I think. So yeah, I mean, just a couple of weeks really of just testing it out and grabbing a couple of people from the community to, you know, try different game modes and give suggestions and whatnot.
So now this all kind of operates on your servers. And have you done anything else with your servers that you want to kind of relay to the, it looks like you've got what, 5 ports for this kind of project. So yeah. You still have a bunch more ports and a bunch more available servers, correct?
Like, yeah.
Aside from this.
Yep. I've got one. I've got one server in San Francisco, and then I've got one in Chicago, one in Toronto, and then one in New York City. And then the test server is also in New York. And the, mm-hmm. the idea there is that a lot of Quake World players are European based as well. And so mm-hmm. like them testing, you know, hitting New York servers, a lot of times they can get sub 150 ping, which is usually good enough at least to test it out.
Sure.
But yeah, so yeah, I do. I have ports all over the northern US.
That's great. So now have you guys had any events, like any competitions with these new maps?
Not exactly like competitions so much as just featuring them in like weekly events and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, that kind of is a focus of mine. I definitely want to do like one day tournaments regarding like definitely new maps and other maps that are newer to the competitive scene. I think maps like Catalyst, for instance, I think that map coming from a newer game like Reflex really kind of drew attention of maybe other people that play other games and other communities to maybe come play or try Quake World at least. So people making newer maps or coming from other games, mappers from other games is definitely something I would encourage because I think that would be a draw.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even think of that, but you're so right, you know. And I have seen people coming to the Quake Mapping Discord saying, how do I do this? Save, you know, can I, you know, reverse engineer something? How do I do this? Decompile, what have you? And I'm like, well, it's, you know, that's not exactly kosher, but I can understand people really wanting the same layout and everything. So we kind of try to give people as good clear advice as we can, because people will pop in and like, who's this guy? I've never heard of this person. And they're like, oh yeah, well, I'm trying to port this thing to Quake World. I'm like, great, go for it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, map ports are definitely cool, like Catalyst. And then taking from those ideas, I think I only bring that one up because it's actually in like, you know, Hammer Time and a number of other tournaments that are happening in Europe already. And it's a newer map for Quake World. And mm-hmm. so I think that people seeing those like on stream or seeing them being played in servers, that kind of just gives them like, oh yeah, cool. Like newer ideas on how to make multiplayer maps that maybe the base id one maps, you know, you don't see so much of those ideas.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Cool. So well, it's, you know, as usual, you're doing you're serving the community. I mean, your hard work and all these servers and just the access is just, it's so cool. I mean, so since the last time we spoke with you, and I didn't take note of when that was, but it's been a while. How has the community kind of changed? Is it growing? Is it expand and contract, or is it just kind of steady at a certain amount of folks that join in?
Yeah, I would say there's a good, solid, regular player base nowadays. And I would say that, yeah, there's definitely people who kind of pop in every once in a while, and there's all different levels of commitment to it, which is really cool to see. You know, we, like I say, we have events every night of the week, pretty much during the week. And those usually always happen, whether they're 4-on-4 or 2-on-2, and usually for a couple of hours at least. So I think my overall goal of people who, you know, install Quake and they go to the server browser to see if people are playing. And then if we have it active at least every night in a region that's close to them, I think that's working. I think that's drawing people in. So that's good.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm still hoping one day that we'll have, you know, like Quake 2 or Quake 3, like you pretty much, like you see in most other arena first person shooters, like an always active FFA or otherwise port, whatever the popular game mode is in that game. So I think we're still driving towards that level of player base, but we're getting there.
Great. That's awesome news. Yeah. I feel so guilty for this interview because it's like, God, I haven't played multiplayer in so long. And it's been like shortly after our last interview, I kind of jumped in a few times and I just, you know, real life and all the other things that are on my plate, but I do,
sure. Yeah.
I really enjoyed my time when I did that. So if people listening haven't taken the plunge, please go play. It is worth your time. And I know a lot of folks that listen to this podcast are mappers and everything, but you got to kind of know the other side of the coin. The single player map and the multiplayer side are such different creatures, but there's so much overlap. You really should at least, I think every single player mapper should have at least one deathmatch map under their belt. A lot of times people come from deathmatch and then go to single player as well. So like I did.
I like seeing the really creative There's one mapper, Zungryware. I'll shout him out. He's been making a lot of really like creative maps lately for deathmatch, where like there's one map where you have, you know, obviously you start with your shotgun, and I don't think there's any weapons available to you as you start, but as time progresses and it hits like 30 seconds or 1 minute, a cage will lift off a weapon type. And so all of a sudden, you know, a super nail gun's available and everybody has super nail gun because, you know, this weapon's available. And then over time, XYZ, all the weapons become available, different armors and stuff like that. Or different things where like there's keys that make room, certain room, only rooms only be accessible once you've accessed this key. And, I don't know. I think those are really cool ideas, and I haven't actually like tested those maps out too much, but I think creativity like in the mapping community has really gone up, and it's really cool to see.
Oh yeah. I mean, just, and for my part in single player, the Quake mapping Discord, you know, you've just got a huge influx of people over the last, you know, 6 months, and yeah, the creativity level is just kind of staggering because people are coming from other communities and bringing what they know, quite a few Half-Life people, Source people, a smattering of multiplayer folks that have come from, you know, different arena first person shooters. So I totally agree. It's like, you know, a couple of years ago, you had a couple single player people post maps on a regular basis. I'm like, oh, that's a cool map. Or, you know, now it just seems like an explosion. Like there's something new almost daily that you can check out. And you're right, Zungryware is extremely involved in single player, multiplayer, and I believe LibraQuake, which is we'll cover later down the line, but someone is doing a kind of a LibraQuartz style thing where it's all assets that are made from the community and they're free so that people could play a free version of Quake if they wanted to.
I'm aware of that project, and that's really cool what they're doing. I mean, once they accomplish it and then they've made all of the assets license free or virtually license free, to have that drop-in replacement would be really cool, because then you could put stuff like Quake World on, you know, say the Steam store and then things like that, and it might pass their muster because, you know, there's no licensing tied up with it. So that's pretty neat. It's pretty neat what they're all doing. Yeah. And it is cool to see that crossover from, you know, single player to multiplayer mapping.
Correct. Yeah. And they've made a real solid effort to do multiplayer maps for that as well. So talk about creativity. There's just creativity on kind of the status quo of like single player communities over here and multiplayer communities over here, and multiplayer community likes their four maps or, you know, half a dozen maps that have been played for years. And so now, you know, flash forward a few years, now it's just like exploding and there's all kinds of options and things. Now and I know it's just, I don't know if it's laziness or just a lack of time or effort, or just maybe I'm not that technical, but I've always struggled with finding the right source port to that I love. I just don't love what's out there for multiplayer. I really don't. To me, there's no really good option, or maybe I'm wrong and I just need to put in the time. And I think that's probably half, you know, both of those things are true. So has anything happened recently with source ports or upgrades to source ports or things like that?
Sure. Well, I mean, FTE is always in development. So, I mean, there's always new releases of that coming out. But I mean, as far as the dedicated Quake World source port, that the go-to Easy Quake, there hasn't been a new release actually since the last time that we talked. But recently, the lead developer that's working on the new OpenGL renderer, Mieg there, he started working on the project again. So I think there might be a new release coming out soon. But I mean, if I was you, and I'm not sure if you have, I would definitely check out, you know, EasyQuake 3.5 and certainly the GLSL, the new renderer branch. Because that seems to give a lot of people a big performance boost.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked that, because it was a difficult, you could hear me, I was trepidatious. I was like, trying to be careful with my words, because I'm not lazy, but it's just, I get to a point where like, I don't have time for this. I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And just the barrier to entry has always been a bummer for me, because honestly, my ideal Quake port would just be, would look exactly like what I play single player with, you know, no colors, no skins, no, I would just kind of jump in and want to play. And I have yet to be able to, FTE is the closest I could get, but then there were some issues with downloads. So I'm sure those are fixed.
A lot of people go straight to NQuake, which is a package for EasyQuake, which adds all those sort of new upgraded textures and all the kind of new flashy stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you just get the base EasyQuake package, it's pretty much, I mean, it's not quite, but it's fairly vanilla Quake World without all of the extra PK3s and stuff that comes with NQuake.
Right.
I mean, you can even just download NQuake and install that with that easy installer that it comes with, and then just kind of cut all of those packs out or rename them, and you should be able to get something that looks pretty vanilla. So yeah, I would check it out. I try to make it easy. If you go to discord.usquake.world, you'll end up in the channel Spawn, and in there's links to NQuake, but there's also direct links to the latest compiled versions of EasyQuake 3.5 for Windows. And also like a one line Git clone for Linux for people to clone it and then build it themselves. Yeah, if you check that out, you should be able to grab it from there and just give it a whirl.
I'm clicking on Alpha 2.0 right now.
So
well, good. Then I'll get my lazy act in gear and I will, you'll see me this week after work jumping in. So I'm going to just click on my download location while we're sitting here doing this interview. I'm so glad to have you on the show and get that update. But obviously new listeners, people that haven't heard your previous interview, will hopefully heed your words and join your server and jump in and give it a shot.
Yeah. The new render is really cool. I mean, it's, the new GLSL, the new GLS language there for OpenGL, it relies more heavily on your GPU to do more of the compute side of the tasks of rendering. So it actually, takes some pressure off of your CPU. So if you have an older system with an older CPU, but a newer GPU, you should see a big performance boost. So that's kind of nice.
So yeah, because I'm not even familiar with GLSL at all. I'd be just like, oh, okay, that sounds awesome. I'll have to do some homework. Now, what have you been up to as far as, I know we had talked about that you might have wanted to do kind of a tournament, and refresh my memory. Did you guys do a tournament? Like a kind of big event?
Yeah, back in the USQC community, we did that Manifest Destiny tournament where we teamed up within the keep and stuff, and that was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. How did that end up from your viewpoint? Was that
really cool? Yeah. Yeah. We had Bold Huge Crunch and Blood Dog in the final, and that was really entertaining to watch for five rounds there. And I think they went for some extra at the end, and yeah, that was really cool. I think there's a lot of talent in North America. The cool thing is that talent even plays in Europe with 100 plus ping and competes at their respective levels. So I do think it's really cool and important to showcase those players that are playing in North America when they play at a low ping, against each other. It's even better. So it's cool to see. Yeah.
That's great.
Definitely want to organize something like that in the future. I've been thinking 2-on-2 because that's a much more approachable game type, than dual or even 4-on-4, because there's quad, which is a good equalizer, and the weapons stay, so you don't have to worry about respawn time on those and stuff like that. So I've been thinking about maybe like a 1-day 2-on-2 tournament in the future, or in the near future would be good.
Yeah, actually, I didn't even realize that. Because I think I'm usually the experience I've had on your servers are as FFA. So what are the differences between the power-ups and the things like that? Because I know you're using KTX. So is there a difference between dual and 2-on-2 and then 2-on-2? And you had mentioned the difference with 4-on-4 with quad and weapon stay. So tell me the differences between those three different modes.
Sure. So 1-on-1, the weapons are going to stay. You're going to pick up ammo packs and they're going to be picked up and then they're going to respawn. There's going to be no quad. So that would be the big difference between 2-on-2, where it's essentially the same, but there is quad, and quad spawns every minute. So you have to get back to the quad location every minute, or your team does, right, to pick it up. So that kind of becomes sort of the central focus if the map has a quad on it. which typically if you're playing 2-on-2, you play with maps that do, versus 4-on-4, where the weapons, they do not stay. So you have to time those and pick those back up in a rotation. And then the fun part of 4-on-4 is sort of controlling the map and then arming up each one of your teammates and keeping the other team from arming themselves up, which can, you know, that's how you can kind of hold the map and extend your lead there.
That's great. Yeah, I misunderstood what you said earlier. So weapons don't stay on 4v4, but they do on 2. So that's very cool.
Yeah.
And that makes a huge impact on your mapping, on what you, you know, what you how you need to design the space and everything. That's very cool. So now with that question, what are some great maps for 4v4? Let's say if some mappers listening, not that this is all focused on mapping, but a good portion of my audience is interested in mapping. So can you just kind of give us some broad strokes on those different, you know, the different designs or just kind of your observations on good maps that you've played?
I think 4-on-4, because of weapon economy and ammo economy, that's the big focus. So if you look at a map, old school maps like E1M2, for instance, which is a pretty big, it's, you know, one of the big three that they play in competitive 4-on-4. Mm-hmm. That's a really low economy map. I mean, there's one rocket launcher and there's one yellow armor and one green armor. So that's pretty much your powerful items on the map, versus other types of maps that have more, you know, more stuff like DM2, for instance, has two rocket launchers. Right. So there's a low rocket launcher. There's a high rocket launcher. There's just more stuff. So I think a lot of times people who play 4-on-4 look at it as low economy maps and high economy maps. And so when you're mapping, I would think the focus would be on the items and also on the amount of them, the amount of ammo, and then how easy it is to access all that stuff.
And obviously playtest for, you know, long stretches with multiple play types and player types.
Yeah.
To kind of solve the issues.
Typically you want to lay out stuff so that it is hard to control the entire map with just a person or two. If it's a 4-on-4 map, you would like it that the items and the more powerful stuff is spread out far enough, whereas you're going to have people holding different areas essentially, in rotation, you know? So if I'm holding a rocket launcher far away and you're holding an armor far away and we're communicating with each other that we're okay and we have these areas covered, so we know that nobody else sort of has the ability to get those items. And so that's, if I was mapping for 4-on-4, I would think about it like that, sort of how to disperse it all.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And then how about size? Obviously dual maps, you're going to be on the smaller side, 2-on-2, even, you know, just a touch larger, I would guess. It just depends on what it is and the layout. But 4-on-4, what is your kind of, like, is DM2 a large 4-on-4 map in your estimation? Because that's the one I know the best, I guess.
You know, DM2 is interesting, right? Because people play that in every game mode, right? So it's sort of like the perfect medium-sized map, because people even play it 1-on-1. So yeah, I don't know. I would say when I look at some of the CMT maps, maybe those might be on the larger side, like CMT1B or CMT4. There's a lot of different, I mean, those are areas that are completely separate from each other. You know, if two different battles can be happening at the same time between different teammates, I would consider that a pretty large map. I don't know, when you look at scale, as you probably have encountered all the time with people coming from different games, it's totally different, you know, from like Quake World to like Quake 3 CPM to basically all the, you know, any sort of Q fusion game like Warfork or those kind of things. So it's interesting when people maybe come from different games, their scale might be a little bit too big, just like everything kind of seems too big. I would start small. I would start small and maybe work your way to make it bigger as you kind of play test it. That would be my suggestion.
Now, you mentioned Zungriware's kind of, I don't want to say gimmick maps, but things that have different kind of non-uniform kind of behaviors, like weapons spawning at different times. Are there any of those things that are frowned upon, like the crushers in DM2 or what have you? Is there anything that people are like, no, do not put that in a competitive map ever?
I don't know. I would say people are mostly concerned with map flow. You know, as long as you have the ability to plan your routes and then work on those routes, like practice them and see how fast you can run them and be able to get to items and time items and get back to other ones, I don't think it really matters so much. I mean, if you have a lot of obstruction in the way and those things aren't really conducive to gameplay, or you have like really narrow doorways or passageways where you can't really bunny hop through them too well, or, you know, if everything's just too small or too narrow or too trapped in a room feeling, I feel like people, that's sort of the thing people focus on, that and item placement.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, overall geometry is definitely, and that's to each mapper's, you know, sort of artistic style. And I can't really speak to that too much, but I would say that, yeah, the big thing is flow and item placement overall.
I was going to, something popped into my head when you were talking there. I remember the last time I connected to one of your servers, and I'm so, I'm apologizing if I'm getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's your server. You have a practice server, right? Where you can practice movement.
Oh, yep.
Well, here's my story. It's a short story. I have spawned into that server maybe two or three times, and I can't get to the first platform. So I have no idea what I'm supposed to do in that map or on that server. I'm just like, practicing dying. This is great.
Okay.
What am I supposed to do?
I'm not sure which map it is.
There's a bunch of,
if it's Z-Strix or what it is.
I think it's the jump map, or I don't know what map it was. I just connected to it, and there's,
yeah. I mean, some of them you're basically practicing like a strafe jump. So where you sort of start from, you sort of move your mouse in a 90-degree angle, and then as you jump, you sort of hold a strafe key and you hold forward and you sort of jump at the perfect right time and hold your jump and try to see if you can mind the gap. And that kind of helps you practice sort of throw your character into starting your movement when you're trying to bunny hop, to try to get them to go as fast, like, you know, get them right up to 450, 500 UPS in one jump.
Right. So I probably I've never done that in my Quake career, probably ever.
Sure. And then, I mean, other maps are much more simple. They're just they're sort of helping you figure out how to time a hop. So when you're jumping from platform to platform, it's typically that it's trying to help you time. Okay, I'm on my other strafe key now, and I need to make sure I'm holding my jump before I hit this platform so that I can sort of, you know, bunny hop or strafe jump off of it to the next one, and then continue your speed, which kind of, and when you go back to regular maps, kind of teaches you like, okay, so I can kind of plan in my route how I'm going to be jumping or how I'm going to be moving, those kinds of things.
I'm going to have some younger, better players show me in a server how to do this.
There's cooler race maps too. I mean, there's the slide maps where they're all just based on your knowledge of kind of slopes and sliding. So you're not really doing much jumping yourself, except for certain portions of them. But mostly you're just a controlled slide where you can get up to like 12, 1300 units per second. And you just try to get to the end as fast as you can. You know, there's other cool stuff on the race boards.
Well, I can just assure you, I might try them, but I won't be good at them. But that's very cool. That's good to know. And I remember Roman came in, a mapper named Roman, who's been away for a while from the Quake mapping Discord, but he his first map was a slide, kind of a combination slide jump map, and it was just something completely new. I'm familiar with those from TF2 and Counter-Strike, but I'd never really seen it in Quake, so it was kind of fun to see. I was like, oh, that's cool that this exists, this is a thing in Quake. So I'm sure it started there, you know, but I never came across those things.
Yeah, there's another mapper that just came out with a new race map, I think last week or the week before, race 15, an analyzer, I think his name is, or I'm not sure. But I don't have it off the tip of my tongue, but either way, race 15, really cool. I think it's custom textures, and I saw him play testing it on stream the other day, but yeah, I have it on my servers. And people have already set, I think there's a top 4 world records already on badplace.eu.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So people are already on it. You know what I mean?
So now you have this US Quake World map testing server. So how do people, if they want to kind of make use of this tool, how do they get started?
Yeah. So just go in your browser, if you're not already a member of the Discord, and just http://discord.usquake.world. As soon as you're there, just message me or just let us know. We have a channel called Cartography, like for mappers. Just let us know that you want an account, and it's just a basic HTTP authorization. So I'll just send you a username and password. And how you utilize the tool is you go to your web browser and you just go to test.usquake.world. From there, you can upload your map, and then BSP Util will scan it, let you know if it's good to go. And if it is, it'll move it into the maps server or into the maps folder of the server. From that point, you can start and stop 5 different ports from the web portal, and then you can open your Quake client, actually connect to those ports and play it and test it and invite other people to. And so once you're in your Quake client, you would type connect test.usquake.world, and then you would type colon the port number after that, and the port number would correspond to the one you started in your web browser.
That's very cool. And you can see if other ports are being run, so you know, you can figure out. It's all very straightforward on here.
Yeah, it utilizes QuakeStat, and it just watches the ports with the same server that's running them. And so if you can see if what ports are started and if there has players on them. So you know what ports not to stop, you know, if you're trying to restart a server to make sure that the map aliases update for your new map that you just uploaded. Because that's one thing with Quake World servers is it creates aliases for all the map names so that you don't have to type /command map, the map name .bsp or paths or anything like that. When you're a player, you can just type, you know, the map name simply, and that will alias to the actual command. So sometimes you'll have to reconnect to the server once or twice to re-download the map aliases so that you can switch to the map that you just uploaded. But if you're having a problem with that, you can go to the web portal. And if it's not working for you, you can go to the web portal and just stop the port, then restart it. And that'll immediately recreate that entire mapless alias. And then you can re-download it if you reconnect.
Nice.
So that's kind of where, that's why that, you know, tool is that way, where you can hit stop and start.
And so now I've noticed this. There's another Discord called Quake World Cartography, and you guys aren't really affiliated, but I'm assuming there's some kind of overlap and some. What can you tell us about that community?
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it's essentially people that are just making Quake maps that are specifically for KTX mod. So, you know, stuff that's going to play well and have availability of other people to look over maps or test them or give advice and stuff like that. So it's a really cool resource. I would check it out. There's a number of maps that have come out of that pool of mappers that are on my servers and on a number of Quake World servers. So I think the collaboration effort there is going really, really well, sort of like your community with the single player stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like they have a lot more guides too, because I looked at this a while ago. And now I'm kind of perusing as we're talking, and it's quite a bit of really good information about R speeds, performance optimization, different tools. So yeah, it's very cool. And there's even a reflex map converter. I didn't know that existed. So that's interesting. Yeah, cool stuff. So there's obviously, since the last time you were a guest on the show, things have changed and gotten more advanced and easier to do. And I just can't thank you enough for, you know, just for my part, just for all the work you've done. That's just really cool. I mean, good for you. And I'm so happy that it's successful and people are utilizing this.
Absolutely. Yeah, the mapping is really cool. And yeah, I, like I say, I just think these new maps and new map ideas could bring in new players. And when people see them on streams or in videos or XYZ, I think it really encourages people to give it a shot. So that's kind of my driving, you know, force behind this is, you know, trying to see if new people will give the game a shot.
Well, we'll just keep at it and keep, I'm sure the creativity and all the activity is going to expand and get bigger and bigger. So, you know, thanks for coming on the Quakecast. And I just want to say now in public, like anytime you have a special announcement for anything, let's do this. Jump on. We'll put it on the Quakecast. And certainly I see you posting on Quake mapping all the time. You're so good at like, hey, there's a free for all, come on down. There's all these invitations. So if people on Mike, on my Quake mapping Discord, you know, pay attention to those because they're voluminous and there's plenty of opportunities to jump in. So,
yep, I'll keep at it too. So I'll keep annoying them. So I'll be there. I'll be there.
No,
I'll
be, and there's a multiplayer self-assigning role too that people can. I don't know if people know this, but they can self-assign roles. Certain roles, and multiplayer is one of them. So if you want those notifications, at least from the Quake Mapping Discord, go ahead and jump in there. And obviously go to the US Quake World Discord as well. So thanks again for being on the show. And, you know, you're welcome back anytime, whether it's a 2-minute announcement for something or just want to kind of update us on what's going on.
Cool, man.
All right. Next up on the episode, we have Greenwood returning with his vanilla scoops. How are you, Greenwood?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's a beautiful winter day here in Southern California. It's been a good one. So you have some maps for us. And by the way, everybody really liked the other segment that we did on the last QuakeCast. So, you know, hoping to make this a regular thing. And you've got a few more maps today. So what's your first recommendation?
Yeah, so this is going to be like vanilla scoops number 2. The best vanilla map per author. So, this map is called Death's Taste, and it's by a mapper called Utah. I couldn't find a heck of a lot more about this particular mapper, because he did one map, but he did one heck of a map. It's rated excellent on Quidicted. It's a medieval map. Or, you know, specifically maybe one would call a wizard map, and it hails from back in 1997, and it's an excellent map. You start off at the beginning entering into a castle, and then you got to work your way back out of the castle, go down below in the moat area to open up certain doors and, you know, work your way within the bowels of the castle. And it has really, what's really nice about it, it has some really nice close combat scenarios. And he takes full advantage of the fantasy bestiary. And it looks good. It's got high playability. It's extremely fun. It has 61 enemies. And I could not really see much of a variance. There's no variance of enemies depending on the skill settings. But I'm guessing, you know, if you go with a higher skill set, you know, the enemies might attack more frequently, etc. And it's just for me, it's a very classic example of a medieval map, and it's an excellent map considering it came from the year 1997. And I was going to say one particular note he had in the notes. He said there is also a well hidden room with my signature. Let me know if you can find it. It's not a registered secret, so it's not one of the 4 secrets, but it's in there. I noticed when I was doing the demo for you that if you looked on some certain walls and ceilings, you would actually see semi-hidden initials, like an A out of Utah or an H, that you would actually have to get to the side to see the shadow, because it was basically stamps of the same texture. And I think if you get all 4, if you shoot the UTAH, I think you get access to that hidden room. I've only been able to get, like, I think 2 or 3 letters at a time. So I have yet to find this quote-unquote hidden room. But the map is a blast. I mean, I haven't seen a negative review yet for this map. It's unfortunate that Utah, his handle is Utah, never did another map, because I highly recommend it. It's a fun map.
Yeah, definitely 4.3 out of 5 with 37 ratings, which is quite a few actually for Quidicted. That's cool. Well, I'll be downloading that one for sure. So that's Death's Taste. What's your next map?
This next map is called The Grinding of Teeth. And it was done in 1999 by a gentleman named Rudolf Kremers. Rudolf Kremers. And to me, this is like an example, a quintessential example of a runic map. It's got a very nice layout, great gameplay, a lot of good movement throughout. It's got a nice challenge. It's got some little secrets. I think it's got like two secrets. Three. One is there's one secret that actually will turn off the nail trap, and that's not included in the secrets. So if you ask me, there's actually three secrets. Mm-hmm. It's got on easy. If you play on a easy skill setting, it's got 21 enemies. For everybody else, normal on up, it's got 29, and you're like, well, that's not a lot of enemies. But it's a short map, and the way he places the enemies in this nice short, I can see this also being a very good deathmatch map. The way it's laid out, because that's the thing, the way he places the enemies, it's not a lot of this like go down the hallway, you come up to a guy, you shoot him, you keep going down the hallway. No, you're doing a lot of moving around. In one part in particular. You get two vores. So like when, you try to run away from one vore ball, you come around the corner, another hallway, guess what? You're met by another one. So you better start doing some figure eights and some moving around. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun, but it's got high replay value. I've played it several times and I still enjoy it. And it's just a good, solid, clean construction. I think it's like I said before, it's, to me, it's like a quintessential example of a classic runic map. And it's also got a excellent rating on Quiddicted. And just one little point I wanted to throw in there. Also included in the download is a short story by Shambler.
Hmm.
Shambler included a little short story to go with the map. And from what I could also gather from Rudolf Kremer's email, is he's from the Netherlands. So now we have a Dutch mapper. So there you go.
Nice, nice. So that's the Grinding of Teeth.
The Grinding of Teeth, yes.
So your next map is part of a speed map pack back in speed map pack 41, which is quite a while ago.
From 2003.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to throw in a quote-unquote speed map gem. So this next map is from a mapper called Asaki. They did quite a few speed maps and some joke maps from back in the days. I think also this might be the same person that went by quote-unquote Lord Asaki. But here it's just Asaki. And the name of the speed map is called Kill All Enforcers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from Speed Map 41, like you said. And it's, I guess you could call it a base theme, because obviously the only enemy in the map is enforcers. But this is a very interesting map. I wouldn't really call this, necessarily a importance of theme. Obviously he skinned it. Or rather, you'll see it if you play the game, that it's skinned in a using base textures. But what's really particularly interesting about this map is the gameplay. It's got very unique gameplay. And what you're doing is you're doing a lot of platforming and a lot of grenade lobbing, which you really don't see too often in Quake as a kind of a gameplay gimmick. So what you do is you start off on a platform on the high part of like this silo, this, cylindrical shaft type of structure. And you're armed with only a grenade launcher and a limited amount of grenades. I think they gave you like two small boxes, kind of bookend on either side of the grenade launcher. And what you got to do is you got to jump on these cross beams, these diagonal cross beams, these girders, basically, networking of girders that go down the silo. Mm-hmm. You gotta jump on these beams, and you have enforcers on these kind of like floating, glowing platforms that shoot up at you with their laser blasters, of course. So what you gotta do is you gotta get just the right arc and lob to hit them with these grenades. You do have your single-barreled shotgun, so you have like you know, you're limited 20 shots. But once they're gone, that's it. And you trust me, you want to use those or keep them on hand, rather, because you're going to need them later. So what you're doing is you're jumping down on these series of beams, these girders, while you're taking out enforcers. And once you kill them all and you work your way down the silo, and of course on the bottom of the silo is a nice welcoming pool of hot lava. So so needless to say, watch your step. Once you get all the way down to the silo and you kill everybody, that will trigger a door opening, and then you go into a cavernous kind of like mining complex with platforms and holes. It's almost like a four-level, you know, tiered type of complex, and then you got to continue killing enforcers. They kind of re-up you on the grenades. So now you're back to grenade lobbing, and now instead of trying to lob your grenades around these girders, now you have this perpendicular structure of beams that you have to kind of work your grenades through. It's almost like, I mean, imagine trying to thread a needle with a grenade launcher. So it can be pretty interesting. And then once you kill everybody, there you go. Time to exit. And of course, like always, watch your step, because in some of the holes here and there, there is also nice welcoming pools of hot lava. If you need to work on your grenade lobbing skills, it's an excellent map to work to, you know, to practice that with. But it's also a lot of fun. I did a demo for you know, a full playthrough, and it took me probably about 6 or 7 times to get through in one go.
Oh wow!
because you'll do really well, and then you'll make one little jump, and then, you know, splash, you're taking the lava swim. Or maybe you run out of grenades, or maybe you're doing awesome, but you take on too many hits, because, you know, you know, I mean, if you get about 2 or 3 enforcers, you know, shooting at you at once, and you
get in trouble quickly.
Sure. And then when you get into the mining complex area, it's very dark. You've got some very, you know, he makes good use of the shadows, and it's simple in concept, but it's fun, and it's got some unique gameplay. I mean, there's a reason why people still play Ms. Pac-Man and Tetris, and those aren't exactly, you know, visual marvels. But, you know, people keep coming back to them because, you know, they have, you know, it's simple, unique gameplay, yet it's challenging to master. So it's a very unusual and neat map.
That's great. Yeah, sometimes those gimmick maps are kind of like when you first start playing them, it's like, oh, is this any fun? But this one sounds awesome, you know, because like you said, it's one weapon, basically, one enemy, but still super creative and very playable, obviously. If you played it multiple times, it's cool.
It's you get a nice sense of satisfaction. You're like, yes, finally. When you get down to the very end, it's pretty much all just beams. So you know, and some areas that you can land. So, you know, it's like every other spot is ground or a platform. So the last thing you want to do is go through all that, kill everybody, and then just make one, you know, misstep and fall into lava right before you get to the exit, which I think I did that one playthrough. I'm like, yes, I killed them all. And then splash. No, you know, what are you going to do? It happens.
All right. Well, thank you for giving us another helping of your vanilla scoops. And I'm sure you'll be back soon with more maps.
All right. Well, thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Quakecast. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back soon. And don't forget, while you're waiting for another episode of the Quakecast, you can always check out inthekeep.com, where the Motherlode has a lot of great interviews and content for arena first-person shooters, including Quake.